Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
Here we go.
Email us at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com.
Here we go.
We're here to help you win the ultimate bragging rights, a fantasy title.
Let's go.
Now, here's Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
Today on the show, we are looking at Dave Richards' running back tiers. We did quarterbacks a couple days ago. We'll move on to running backs today. Are there more than three elite running backs? Is Jordan Howard one of them? Who are the mid-round, high-upside guys that we like? All that good stuff. And the big news, Jamie Eisenberg has returned, and we are whole again. Welcome back, Jamie.
Thanks, buddy. It's good to hear your voice after seeing you at your wonderful wedding.
Oh, that was really... It was nice of you to be there. Dave, thank you for the gift. Heath, where's yours?
I wasn't invited. I have no obligation to buy a gift, and I wouldn't have bought a gift even if you would have invited me.
And we're off to a testy start to the podcast. I like it.
Jamie, real quick, how nervous are you about Ezekiel Elliott since you haven't weighed in on it?
Not nervous at all.
No. Would you move him down if he had a 2-game suspension?
No.
Neither would I.
Cool.
But I'll move him down in my top 200, yes. Move him down in my running back rankings, no.
Interesting. So you would take the receivers ahead of the big three receivers.
I would take Antonio Brown ahead of him, which I already am in PPR, but I wouldn't standard also.
All right, cool. Hey, listen, start your fantasy football league right by booking your draft party at B-Dubs. You'll get a free draft kit and enjoy a draft feast of boneless wings, three sides, and three shareables at a special price only at Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports at participating locations while supplies last. Very cool offer. Check out Buffalo Wild Wings. See if you can make that happen. All right, we're not going to do too many emails today, I don't think, because I believe we'll have a mailbag show tomorrow. We're going to have a Friday podcast. Our email address is fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. But we did get email of the day number one from a guy in a cube near the city that throws things at Santa. Philly, right? Philly?
That would be Philly.
Okay. And the subject is, Heath is wrong about consistency.
Side note, if you want to get your email read, start it by putting in the subject, Heath is wrong.
But I did ask you if it was okay, and you said yes.
Yeah.
There's a few things. Die Hard, not a Christmas movie. Always get read.
Azer, I love your voice.
Yes. Sing more.
Sing more, yeah. Right, if you put a song in your email, it will get sung. Here's the question from Guy in a Cube near the city that throws things at Santa. Dear Al, Steve, and Kelly, that feels like Married with Children to me. Oh, I got that. That was a pretty impressive. Good job by me. I was listening to the podcast last week, and Health was saying, spelled Heath wrong, Health was saying that consistency didn't matter, just total points.
Not what I said.
I think he's overlooking, quiet Health, one glaring factor about constancy, and that is you have to make start-sit decisions weekly. If you owned Mark Ingram last year, you would know this all too well. In week 8, he had -1.5 fantasy points in PPR, which is a shame that will extend to his future generations. So like everyone else in fantasy, I benched him the next week, and he goes off for 31.3 PPR points. And then next week, I started him again. He scores 8.3. In conclusion, since you have to make a decision every week on who to start, inconsistency can cost you a ton of points. Also, I hate Mark Ingram.
I spoke to Mark Ingram last week, and he still carries around that shame of that performance from last week. He actually wears it like a Flava Flav necklace around his neck. he has that, you know, box score on his body.
Well, you shouldn't have sat him in that game against San Francisco. We knew he was going to go
obviously.
Off. Yeah. All right, Heath. So what did Guy in a Cube get wrong here?
Okay, I did not mean to insinuate that consistency during the football season doesn't matter. What I tried to say was I do not believe consistency necessarily carries over from season to season. Mark Ingram going into last year would have looked like a very consistent running back if you looked at his game logs from the year before. The other thing I think is we're really, really bad at defining consistency. And I would use like Mike Wallace as the example.
Of course you would.
You can say Mike Wallace only had 6 games last year with 7 fantasy points. He was not consistent at all. And you compare him to the receivers that finished right around him, and they all had more than 6 with 7 fantasy points. But I can just change the number to numbers and say Mike Wallace only had 3 games last year with less than 5 fantasy points. Every other receiver in that range had more than 3. Most of them had 5 or 6 games with less than 5 fantasy points. Mike Wallace didn't kill you near as often as those guys did.
He had a bunch of games with 5 and 6 fantasy points.
Exactly.
I don't want a guy who's going to give me 5.
But is that killing you? Or is that worth starting? How do you define a 50, 60-yard game with no touchdowns?
It's a terrible game.
For a number 3 receiver or flex?
Yes.
There's a lot of terrible games out of number 3 receivers and flexes then.
Name the last time you started a player and said to yourself, gosh, I hope he gets 50 or 60 yards.
That's not what we're saying here. I'm not saying that those were like, that was what he was aspiring to. No, it wasn't. The point is to illustrate that consistency we usually define by choosing a number, 7, 8, 10, and saying he had this many games with this many points. When we're acting like the difference between 6 and 7 fantasy points is some huge thing.
But
it's
point. Isn't the more the better conversation not necessarily what consistency is, it's consistency compared to expectation? Because I expect Mike Wallace to be 50 or 60 yards every week, and when he goes above that, I'm happy.
Right.
I expect, let's say, like Amari Cooper, who wasn't very consistent last year at all, I'm expecting him to be 80 or 90 yards every week,
right,
with the chance to score, and he was more often than not disappointing. So I think it's relative to what the player is. Like, one guy I think that this comes up a lot is, you know, the total numbers versus the week-to-week numbers, and we had this over the last 2 years, was Fitzgerald, Larry Fitzgerald. Because his end-of-season numbers, and Emmanuel Sanders also,
yeah,
the end-of-season numbers for those two guys were very good. And there were stretches, certainly for Fitzgerald, more so than Sanders last year, where he was great. But then he all of a sudden just nosedived. And at what point does your expectation become, this guy now has to be on my bench, more so than he's in my starting lineup, especially compared to, which we all fall victim to, where you drafted him, because you're more reluctant to give up on guys that you had high expectations for coming into the season, especially when they either have a track record like Fitzgerald or high expectations like a Cooper.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting discussion. I think I care more about that stuff than most people, because it's hard to predict. You don't know who's going to be consistent. I feel like big play guys, like Torrey Smith back in the day, he was always the one that I would avoid because I thought he was too inconsistent. That was the inconsistent. Yeah, those are the players that are more likely to be inconsistent. DeSean Jackson. Sean Jackson's actually been a really good sort of case study for me in this exercise because, you know, he used to go in like the 5th or 6th round in a 12-team league, as far as I remember, and I never really wanted DeSean Jackson there because I felt like I wouldn't know when to start him and when to sit him. Last year, I was very interested in DeSean Jackson because he was falling a lot later in the draft. The expectations were a lot lower. I was willing to deal with his inconsistency. So I think, you know, I'm not going to take Emmanuel Sanders in the 6th round or where he had been going in previous years. If I can get him in the 8th round, okay, I guess I'd be more interested. I don't know.
But then it becomes what Heath was talking about, though, where it's your number 3 receiver flex, where, again, the expectations are different.
Yeah, and I should probably take that back. I don't know that I'm realistically drafting Emmanuel Sanders, because I just feel like, while, and then we had this argument about Mike Wallace, you know, and when it comes to consistency, I feel like there are so many guys that are going to get drafted after them that have so much more upside that I don't, you know.
But he was a lot more consistent in 2015.
But I don't really consider, like, if you're telling me that he got 5-6 points a week and that's consistent, that's consistently bad. So I don't.
Well, and number 3 is 7 points a week.
That's a big difference. 2 points, one or two points every week.
Well, 6 and 5. Yeah, 6 is 1 point.
But again, you're talking about a guy that no matter, Heath is obviously going to do his best to hype him up. I don't think the average draft position on Mike Wallace is going to change very much, because unless Rashad Perryman falls flat on his face,
and one of those other receivers in Baltimore gets hurt,
falls flat on his face.
Well, like, Wallace is ahead of Perryman right now.
Yes, but Perryman, especially after the report that came out yesterday, is probably going to have the ability to jump higher than Mike Wallace, because the perception of Mike Wallace, even coming off a 1,000-yard season, is still very low. The highest guy that's going to be drafted out of Baltimore is going to be Jeremy Maclin, because A, people are going to associate him with Steve Smith and thinking it's going to be the same thing, and B, aside from last year, there's a track record of Maclin in Philly, in Kansas City, that he's put up numbers pretty much consistently for the majority of his career. So I think once you get to who we're talking about here,
right,
he's never going to ascend to a height of people excited about Mike Wallace. I think when we extend this conversation to players who have shown a lack of consistency, one guy we talked about a lot, you know, before at least my vacation, was Doug Baldwin and where he stacks up. And, you know, Adam, you brought this up a lot, was his numbers last year weren't very consistent.
Yeah, right. And he ends up being a top 10 receiver 2 years in a row. But
right. But you know, but again, his overall numbers were great.
Yeah, you know, Heath is totally on board with him as a top 10 receiver, Doug Baldwin. I don't know, Dave, you can let me know where you stand, but I think Jamie and I have been like, feels a little weird to draft him as a top 10 receiver. And taking Doug Baldwin in the late second round just doesn't feel right to
us. So you think
us.
That Doug Baldwin's going to be inconsistent again next year?
I don't know. He doesn't feel like a top 10 receiver to me because the way he went about putting up those numbers each of the last 2 years didn't really feel like he could duplicate it.
I think Baldwin can be better than he was last year in terms of consistency while still delivering a lot of fantasy points, because I think that whole passing game is going to get better. The offensive line should be better. Russell Wilson's going to be healthier.
But they're going to be more committed to their run game.
That's it. That's.
I don't know if they will or if they won't be.
No. Whether it's successful or not.
They want to
Whether it's successful or not is a different story.
Right. That's
committed
where
to
I
it,
am.
100%. They want to get back to what made them successful, which is not have to rely on Russell Wilson and have him take the hits that he took last year, which resulted in the knee and the ankle injury. Not have to be in a situation where you're chasing points, which they were more so last year than they were in previous years.
I think they just want to have a good run game, period.
That's their identity.
Yeah. Dave,
just one last point.
Yeah, go ahead. Why don't you wrap it up here?
There were only 14 receivers that had 10 or more fantasy points in 50% or more of their games last season. And it's almost every name that you know is like a top shelf brand name.
But I don't
receiver.
Think it's not to interrupt you, but I don't think that's the cutoff though. The cutoff is the next group. Because the
what do you mean?
It's not double digits. I think it's the 7-point number. It's how many receivers hit 7 or more fantasy points. Because that's the group I think where people are struggling with or will struggle with. Because do you take a chance on Mike Wallace becoming the best guy in Baltimore or Perryman or Macklin? Or is it Devontae Parker taking the next step? Or is it John Brown bouncing back from the health? It's that group of guys that you're going to see for the most part, average draft position, our rankings, other sites' rankings, that are going to be probably 20 to 40. And that's the group, I think, where it's the third receiver. It's the flex. It's the guy that you're starting in a three-receiver league. That's the group, because we're all going to say Terrell Pryor maybe this or Sammy Watkins healthy that or whatever the case may be. Those guys are going to kind of define, I think, how your receiving group is. But it's that next group of guys that you're going to have to rely on. And can they hit the 7 number with the chance to, on a good week, be 14 or 15?
But when I draft those guys, I'm not looking for guys that are going to hit the 7 number. I'm anticipating and hoping and expecting that they go higher than that, which is what you do in a draft. You're going to pick players that you think are going
to
do well.
Well, I think you just have to have a realistic approach to it, though.
Right,
the
reality of it all is that there aren't a lot of receivers that provide that great consistency from week to week.
Exactly. But that's the point, is which of the guys that can consistently get you 7? Because like that's what started this, is that Heath was talking about
seven
versus 5.
Yeah, but that shouldn't excite people.
But you're not drafting them to be in the exciting points. You're drafting them in the exciting spots. They're going in the first 4 or 5 rounds.
70 yards a week. 70 yards a week would excite me for a mid to late round pick.
But 60 is terrible.
50 to 60 every week is pretty bad. 70 yards a week is a big deal. Honestly, it really is a big difference.
So the difference between 60, okay.
No, the
difference between 60 and 70.
So if Adam has a
point.
Receiver that gets him 69 yards a week, no good.
Terrible.
Once he crosses over to 70.
Stop acting like Mike Wallace had.
This is interesting because Heath, I think, probably more so than the rest of us, you probably play in more decimal leagues than we do.
Oh, yeah.
Stop acting like Mike Wallace had 60 yards every week. He had barely ever got to 60, at least in the second half of the season.
This is not. Just like this is a consistency conversation, not a Mike Wallace.
I understand that, but there is
as an example.
There honestly is a big difference between 55 yards and 70 yards a week. Like
there's an equally big difference between 50 yards and 30 yards.
Yeah.
Okay. He had fewer of those 30-yard games than any of them.
Right, I understand that, but at some point, a bad game is a bad game. Like, a 50-yard game is a bad game.
So the difference between 50 and 70 is bigger than the difference between
30. No, not at all, but I'm just saying, we already established that those number 3, number 2 receivers are getting 7 fantasy points. I'm just trying to get to that benchmark, and I'm sure this is getting a little confusing. So let's move on. We got news and notes to get to here, and Jamie, I'm going to do you a favor since you've been out on your little vacation. I have your start of the week for week one, if you're interested.
Sure.
It's Martavis Bryant. And you're going to start Martavis Bryant over Dez Bryant. How do you feel about that?
No.
Yep. Martavis Bryant at Cleveland. They're going to want to get him back in the mix. You know, Dez Bryant scored a combined -1 fantasy point in 2 games against the Giants last year. Martavis over Dez, start of the week. You are welcome.
if the Steelers do what they've done with Martavis in the past, they may not even play him in week one.
That's not crap on the start of the week yet, okay? Let's let's give this a little,
the bonanza
a little bit of a chance.
Week.
He won't be the start of the week, I can tell you.
All right, fine. It is a road game after all. So Dallas police are suspending their investigation into a possible assault that may have involved Ezekiel Elliott, which we talked about last show. So right now, no hard evidence, and I guess we'll just see where this Zeke stuff ends up. Luckily, nobody's drafting right now. Actually, I'm hoping to be on the clock, by the way, in a rookie-only draft, so you guys can help me make my pick if that happens in the next half hour. Chargers wide receiver Mike Williams may need season-ending back surgery on a herniated disc in his back, or the epidural could work, and he could be back sooner rather than later. But, all right, Tyrell Williams had a really good year last year. He was 15th in standard. He was 17th in PPR. And Williams with this back injury, or Mike Williams, give me your take on the Chargers wide receivers right now, Dave Richard.
I think Keenan Allen, he got a teeny tiny bump for me in the rankings. And that's because I think that this helps him. This is an outside type receiver, Mike Williams, who isn't going to begin the season on time, could potentially be gone for the whole year, just like you said. And if Keenan Allen's healthy and ready to go and it's starting to look that way, then he should be his targets should be saved. There isn't going to be a player out there that could get 80 targets like Mike Williams could conceivably get if he were healthy and ready to go at the start of training camp. I've been a big Tyrell Williams fan all along. That's the guy who gets the biggest bump. And he's now a number three receiver for me. Mike get even higher than that by the time before we know what happens with Mike Williams. If Williams ends up being ruled out, then Tyrell, he's going to have a big role again, had 1,000 yards last year, has size, speed, and is going to be in an offense that should be explosive. I think it's really good for them. I think it hurts Phillip Rivers just a little bit because he doesn't have that extra weapon. And anytime a first-round pick on offense is gone for the year, it hurts a team.
All right, a couple of quarterback notes. Ron Rivera said that Cam Newton's shoulder is apparently fine. He's coming off of off-season shoulder surgery. And Bruce Arians said something very interesting about Carson Palmer. He said that Palmer wore his arm out last off-season. By the time, by the time September rolled around, beginning of the year, you know, he was having arm issues. And I will ask you guys, who are you more excited about this year, Cam Newton or Carson Palmer?
Cam Newton.
Cam.
Palmer.
Dave.
That's me.
All right. Yeah, Palmer, can you all agree Palmer's a good sleeper this year?
100%.
He is, but there's like 19 of them, so it's hard. That's the only reason I have trouble getting excited about him. I absolutely think Palmer has the ability to get into that top 13, 14, 15 mix this year. He can finish as a top 12 quarterback, but that's like the tip top of the ceiling.
All right. Former Steelers cornerback Ike Taylor says Le'Veon Bell might hold out, but there was a report from ESPN's Jeremy Fowler that says he will not hold out. He intends to play in week one. Green Bay rookie running back Jamal Williams will open up camp as the number two Packers running back. Jamal Williams, how significant is this?
I think it's what we all expected, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay, so not that significant.
I still think he's going to be the best running back in Green Bay, though.
Now that's significant. And wide receiver Geronimo Allison will miss the first game of the year for the Packers for violating the personal conduct policy. And Falcons defensive end Zacharys McKinley, he's their first-round pick, might miss the beginning of the season, still recovering from shoulder surgery, and you know, good pass rush skills could make their defense a lot better. But season opener is certainly in jeopardy for him. Thank you guys for retweeting me. I've been pushing podcastawards.com. You have until the end of the month to nominate us. Please do. Please tell your friends, podcastawards.com. Nominate fantasy football today. And you can nominate fantasy baseball today, I suppose, but we don't want two shows taken away from one. So fantasy football today, please nominate us.
We didn't win yet.
What's that?
We didn't win yet.
I mean, the nominations end at the end of the month, so I won't even know.
Isn't that like a given we're going to win, though?
The nomination or the whole thing?
The whole thing.
Sure. I mean, we've never won before, but yeah, I agree. Totally going to win.
Okay.
Did you enjoy... Can you believe that Heath doesn't like Game of Thrones? Like, how good was that episode?
I liked it. I was surprised that a lot of people did not like it.
People didn't like that episode?
Oh my gosh, people complaining that it was so slow.
What?
I don't get it.
That's terrible. Did you notice Ed Sheeran?
Of course.
Really? You recognized him?
Well, I knew that he had a cameo this season, and it's hard not to mistake his voice when he's singing.
I guess so. I had no idea that he was in it. Good for Allie for recognizing that. Dave, you want to talk running back tiers?
Always.
Let's do it. All right, so you have 6 running backs in your elite tier. But there's still some separation between the top 3, right?
Well, yeah, you've got your big 3, Bell, David Johnson, Ezekiel Elliott, and those will be the ones at the early part of round 1.
Mm-hmm.
Quite possibly first, second, and third overall. And then the next 3 will come in late round 1, which is Melvin Gordon, LeSean McCoy, and Devontae Freeman. You might see Freeman fall into round 2. I picked him up in round 2 in a couple of drafts already. But I think he's worth it in late round 1. If you have to have a running back, if there isn't a receiver that you like at the end of round 1, don't be afraid to pull the trigger on Freeman.
So as we go through this, Jamie, Heath, if you guys agree, disagree, want to talk about it, this is the forum. That's what we do on the podcast, so please feel free.
I don't have anything to really, I agree.
Okay.
What do you think of, and I know I'm just bringing this up because I know Jamie disagrees, but Melvin Gordon versus LeSean McCoy.
I think, I've got Devontae Freeman 4th.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you've got him ahead of both of those guys.
But I don't think there's a lot of separation between the 3 of those, and I'd probably throw Jordan Howard in the mix as well. McCoy has a little bit of an age risk. McCoy was phenomenal last year. He's a better running back than Melvin Gordon. Gordon's in a better offense. Will probably get more carries near the goal line.
But if you're on the clock and you're picking between those 2, are you going to go with
I'm picking LeSean McCoy.
Okay. I like Gordon better just because he's younger, and this is a Chargers team that didn't really replace Danny Woodhead. I'm thinking that Melvin Gordon can pick up some extra
Brandon
catches.
Oliver's back.
Okay.
But wouldn't you say that the Bills have not really replaced Mike Gilsley?
Well, they've got Jonathan Williams, and they brought in these fullbacks, and I don't know what they're thinking with them.
Yeah.
I still think LeSean McCoy is going to be great, and I think he's an excellent fit for the offense that they're going to. I'm just taking my chances on the younger running back.
Oh, I totally get that. But to say that the Chargers haven't replaced Danny Woodhead, to not say that the Bills have not replaced Mike Gilsley, who was as big a threat to McCoy was last year, more so than Woodhead was because Woodhead got hurt in week 2.
Woodhead was a 1,000 total yard running back.
But he got
back,
hurt in week 2. And he was
look
not
what
replaced.
Melvin Gordon did after that.
Exactly. But
so I think he's got a chance to even
he was not
go
replaced,
higher.
Whereas Gilsley was a factor all season long and was not replaced.
You said Ajayi is a guy you like.
I like Ajayi actually better than Freeman.
Talk about it.
Oh, I just think that he's going to be increased as a pass. His role is going to be more involved as a pass catcher. And the key for me, obviously, is Mike Pouncey being healthy. As long as Pouncey's healthy, that's the kind of the crux of where he'll go. But I think Ajayi could actually be the 4th best running back if things work out for the other 3, which mm-hmm. we all hope. And based on what we saw last year, because this is a guy that when things were bad for him, he was in that 70-yard range. When things were great for him, he was
in that 200-yard range.
Right. I just see the upside in this offense and what Adam Gase does, what this offense brings. Should be a more explosive offense if everybody's healthy. And so I just like the scenario for Ajayi, especially if he's going to catch the ball a little bit more.
Yeah, my problem with Ajayi is just so inconsistent.
Well, and... oh, look at you.
I mean, he only had, 5 or 6 games where he got over 9 fantasy points last year. I just want a little more to my number 1 running back.
But he had a lot of bad games, right, Heath? Didn't you point that out?
He had a lot of bad games. He had a lot of really – he had 3 or 4 of the best games of any running back last year. And then 4 of his last 5 games, he had 48 to 61 yards and no touchdown.
It's 6 of his last 8 where he was in that range.
And, Jamie, you wanted to talk about how Jay Ajayi was going to be more of a pass catcher, yes?
Yeah, well, in spending some time with his trainer, Tony Villani, who's based here in South Florida, who trains Ajayi, trains Mark Ingram, trains Pierre Garçon. So I went to go see those guys. Ajayi wasn't there, but I talked to Tony about Ajayi, and he said he expects him to be used more as a receiver, but surprisingly enough, he said that may not be the best situation for him because he's looks the part of one of the best power rushers in the NFL. And if you just go by metrics, he was in the top 3, I believe. Depends on where you cut off the carries, but yards after contact. And so that's a good indicator of outperforming your offensive line. And as we saw when he had his offensive line, and you know, Heath alluded to it, that he had these big games. He had Mike Pouncey healthy for 5 games last year, and 4 of those were double-digit fantasy points performance. I think all 5 were double-digit fantasy points performances. 2 of those were the 200-yard games. One was one we questioned. It was against the Jets. We didn't know how he would do coming off the back-to-back 200-yard games. He had 100 yards against the Jets, which you know, we talked about a lot as last year, and Adam, I know you alluded to it this year, good run defense.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that the more they put the ball in Ajayi's hands, you know, people are going to get concerned about the knee injury. That's not a problem at all right now. That's more of a long-term thing than a short-term thing. He's got really no competition for touches. We saw last year, didn't really get the chance to be a full-time starter until it was the Tennessee game, week 5 or week 6, whatever it was, because of Arian Foster. I just think that Ajayi's got the chance to challenge to be a top 5 running back.
Can we go just slightly off track on the Ajayi thing for a second? Because there's been a lot of talk on Twitter about Ajayi and Jarvis Landry and what happened to Landry's targets last year when the Dolphins went to the more run-heavy attack. And he averaged like 7.2 targets per game the last 12 games of the year. If Ajayi gets more involved in the passing game, is there any way Landry can be a number 2?
Number 2 receiver?
Yeah. I mean, if he gets 7 targets a game, we're talking maybe 100 targets for the year.
It's possible. I mean, you know, they can't all be good. Devontae
right.
Parker can't be good.
Right.
Landry can't be good. Thomas can't be a red zone factor. Stills can't be evolved unless Ryan Tannehill's the best quarterback in football.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless the Dolphins become super efficient and like the best play action team in the history of the National Football
League. All right. To get it back to, because actually, you know, that's something you mentioned, Heath, a couple shows ago with Scott Fish. I think we were talking about that. But to get it back to running backs, so I just this second completed the research, did a little research for you. I looked at the last 3 years and top 12 running backs. I think I've done this before, by the way. In fact, I know I have, but I forgot the results. So last 3 years, top 12 running backs and the rank of the scoring offense that they were on, if that makes sense. For example, last year, David Johnson was the number one running back and he was on the 6th best scoring offense in the NFL. Ezekiel Elliott was 5th best on the 5th best offense. LeSean McCoy, 10th. Last year, only one running back in the top 12 was on an offense that finished worse than 17th. That was Jordan Howard. 9 of the top 12 were on top 10 scoring offenses. You get a pretty similar trend in 2014, where, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of the top 12 were on top 11 scoring offenses. Then you had 15th, 16th, 23rd, and 26th. 2015, there was like no correlation between good offenses and good running backs because 2015 was the worst running back year ever. But I do think you look at the last 3 years and 2014 and 2016, which were more typical running back years, pretty strong correlation between being on good offenses and finishing as a top 12 running back. That's top 12 overall for the season, not top 12 per game. It's standard scoring, not PPR, so keep that in mind. So I guess my biggest fear would be Jordan Howard, who was one of the guys who finished as a top 12 running back on a bad offense last year. He outperformed his offense more than probably anyone in fantasy. My fear, guys, is Jordan Howard is a really good running back who has a nice year but doesn't score touchdowns and disappoints fantasy owners. Do you fear that?
No, because I've got him ranked in my top 10. And I think he can finish as a top 10 guy. And it might take a lot of yards, whether rushing, he's going to get it there, catching, he's going to get a lot of it there. He's the genesis of this Chicago offense now.
Yeah.
They're not going to say, all right, Mike Glennon, lead us into the red zone every single drive. It's going to be Jordan Howard.
I know, but Lamar
takes
Miller
on the majority of that work. And the reason why the Bears could be terrible this year won't be solely on the offense, I don't think. I think their defense is still a major work in progress, especially in the secondary. I think teams are going to be able to throw on them like crazy.
But doesn't that mean they're going to have to throw them? I mean, usually when we talk about something
like
that.
But they throw to Jordan Howard. He catches passes.
He
could always catch more. He didn't get as many as he could have last year.
I think he had, what, 29 catches last year?
Right, so that's low. We'd want him to get into the 30s or 40s.
We would.
If you were putting together a list of guys that could have a Todd Gurley-like disappointment of the year.
He's at the top of the list.
What's that?
He's at the top of the list.
Jordan Howard's right there.
Yeah.
I think a big difference, and I know I mentioned this on a podcast last 2 weeks ago. I don't know. Not on my honeymoon. Before that. He's got 2 really good offensive guards, and Todd Gurley had a trash line last year.
That's true. And I'm not saying that because I'm trying to disparage Jordan Howard. I've got him 10th overall. I think his upside is still too high to rank him lower than that.
Mm-hmm.
But okay. it's certainly within the realm of possibility.
Just the factors are similar.
Yeah.
Rookie campaign, that was great on a bad team, as Adam just alluded to. Bad quarterback play, at least that would be the expectation. I don't think anybody's looking at Mike Glennon or Mitchell Trubisky.
I think those guys will be better than what he had at the end of the year, and he finished the season with six straight games and double digits.
He was awesome.
They may be better, or they may be worse. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a scenario of when you're just comparing it, what happened to Gurley? What could happen to some of these guys? He falls in line with that. I mean, it's just the nature of how things have worked out for him.
All right, back to Dave's running back tiers in just a second. But like, I know y'all love going to games, going to concerts, theater, comedy shows. I know you love saving $20 and just getting the best deals overall. And you're gonna love SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the only app I use for tickets now. I have it on my phone. I often go on my SeatGeek app just to see prices. And then obviously if I want to buy anything, I use the app. And I know I'm going to get the best deals on SeatGeek. By the way, that $20 rebate off your first purchase, promo code is FFT. FFT is the promo code on SeatGeek. Instead of going on multiple sites searching for the best prices, you should just let SeatGeek do that for you. That's why it's great. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites, comparing prices, finding amazing deals. And you're going to get the most bang for your buck because SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. I really do use SeatGeek, and I really do recommend it. And our listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code FFT. That's promo code FFT for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. So Dave's elite tier was Le'Veon, David Johnson, Zeke, Melvin Gordon, LeSean McCoy, Devontae Freeman. We've had some Jay Ajayi discussions here. Jay Ajayi would be in the next tier, the near elite tier, the round two tier. Jordan Howard, DeMarco Murray, Leonard Fournette, and Jay Ajayi. Jordan Howard, DeMarco Murray, Leonard Fournette, Jay Ajayi. Are we all cool here?
It rounds out my top 10. The one that I think I'm the most nervous about is actually Murray, because I think Derrick Henry is, his time is going to come eventually. I don't know if it's going to be week one or week two of this year, but it could be before the end of the year. And the Titans, I know they're going to be certainly interested in running the ball as much as they did last season. They want to use that exotic smash mouth. We've been using that term for a long time. But I think they'll start to loosen the reins on Derrick Henry a little bit more and give him more opportunities. Murray is going to have to get it done in the end zone again. How many touchdowns did they have last year? Is it 12 total that he had in 2016?
Let's see if you're right, Dave. It's going to take me a little bit, but DeMarco Murray had, what did you say, 12? He had 9. Yeah. He had 12!
Good job, Dave.
9 rushing, 3 receiving. He's got to match that, I think, in order to finish as a top 10 guy. The problem is I don't know if the running backs behind DeMarco Murray in my rankings have a chance of coming even close to 10 touchdowns on the year. It's a little tricky, but I'm still taking Murray in round two because I know that he'll get, if he doesn't get 12, maybe he gets 8 or 9. He should still get over 1,000 total yards. I don't think he's over the hill by any stretch. It's just a matter of whether or not Derrick Henry cuts in too much into his workload.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel good with Murray in this tier. The one I would be, and I wouldn't necessarily argue that he's in the wrong tier, but the one I'd be the least comfortable with would be Fournette, just because I don't totally buy into the idea that everything's fixed in Jacksonville and it's an even decent situation.
Okay, and let's go to the next tier then, the excellent tier, which is round three. Three guys here. One of them, you know, in our drafts, it seems like he goes in round two. Isaiah Crowell, Todd Gurley, Lamar Miller. That's round three, that's 11 through 13 in Dave's running back rankings. Isaiah Crowell, Todd Gurley, and Lamar Miller. Gurley's the one that I feel like somebody is usually gambling on in mid to late round two. And what do you guys think of this? Jamie, what do you think about the excellent tier? Isaiah Crowell, Todd Gurley, Lamar Miller.
I mean, these are the three that you're going to see for the most part typically grouped together. Certainly Gurley and Miller. Crowell's kind of still, I think, a polarizing guy to a certain extent. Where he may fall closer to the next group, but I think you hit the nail on the head. People are taking Gurley at the end of round two with the hope that he's the guy you saw as a rookie, with the hope that Sean McVay turns things around for him, that Jared Goff is better, that the addition of Whitworth helps the offensive line enough that it makes Gurley back to where he was. And look, he's come out and said it, which is kind of understandable, but also is a little bit of a lame excuse that last year sucked for everybody all around in Los Angeles, and that he blamed the offense for part of his problems, where, you know, some of it has to be certainly put on him. So there's nobody there to take him off the field. You know, I mean, you could talk about Lance Dunbar and passing down plays, but I mean, Gurley has every opportunity to be a 300, 350 touch guy. And the hope would be is that, you know, he's a 4+ yard per carry guy, a 30 to 40 catch guy, you know, and if that happens for him, then he'll be well worth a second round pick.
All right. Does anybody like, well, Heath, here's a better question. Instead of me stumbling over myself, how would you rank those three? Crowell, Gurley, Miller. That's how Dave has them.
I've got them Gurley, Miller, Crowell.
That's how I think a lot of people are.
I don't.
Just to give you an idea, I'm looking at Fantasy Pros average draft position, and there's a guy that thankfully Dave does not have in this range, but as it goes right now, after Ajayi at 16, which would be the previous group, the next running back off the board is Gurley at 21, Fournette at 23, Marshawn Lynch at 24, Lamar Miller at 25, and then Christian McCaffrey at 32, and Isaiah Crowell at 33.
So if you're asking me who do I like the best out of that group at that ADP, I would take Crowell.
Okay.
But I'd rank them Gurley, Miller, Crowell. I do think there's a chance. I think Hugh Jackson wants to run the ball more. They ran it very few times last year, and in the second half, Crowell actually out-targeted Duke Johnson in the passing game. If that keeps up, then Crowell is probably a number one running back this year.
What does it tell you that they improved their offensive line?
That they couldn't find a quarterback.
A right guard and a center. Well, sure, but they did that before the draft.
Right.
I think it tells you that they want to really recommit to the run.
I have no doubt they want to. I just wonder if they have the patience to when they're down 21 in the third quarter.
That's the thing. It goes back to the same thing with Jordan Howard. When you keep saying the Bears aren't going to let Mike Glennon lead their offense. Every defense that they're facing knows this. Mm-hmm. And every defense that's facing the Browns is going to say, okay, Crowell was
a
1,000-yard guy last year.
It's almost worse for Crowell than it is for Howard.
I would say it's probably equally as bad. I mean, they're both in terrible situations with the talent around them.
Yeah, but if you want to outperform your offense, catch passes. You know, Matt Forte, for example, with the Bears a few years ago,
sure.
They had a terrible offense. He caught a ton of passes and finished as a top 10 running back. And it was very encouraging to see Crowell involved in the passing game. Actually, I encourage you all to read a story that's on CBSSports.com right now on our NFL page. I think it's like Isaiah Crowell is going to explode this year, and some advanced metrics that tell you just how good he can be, some video to show you just how good he can be. And of course, the argument that the reason why these guys like him, I think it happened as soon as they upgraded their offensive line in the offseason. And I don't know. We've talked a lot about Crowell.
It has to do with Crowell too, Adam.
Well, see, that's the thing.
He averaged
4.8
yards per carry last year.
Right. And, you know,
it was up there in yards after contact.
He had so many bad games. So many games with like 25-ish yards. You know, and that I honestly, this is crazy to say, but that one 80-yard touchdown run against Baltimore really made his numbers look better than they were.
Yeah, you know, his rushing average is much closer to 4 yards. I don't know what it is exactly, but closer to 4 yards per carry than,
but
say, 4.5.
If you take those bad games out, it looks a lot better.
Yes, but I'm taking one carry out instead of weeks 5 through 12. He had 30 rushing yards in 6 of 8 games. Fewer than 30 rushing yards in 6 of 8 games. That's like not a lot of carries, but that's crazy. Fewer than 30 rushing yards in 6 out of 8 games in the middle of the season.
Still managed to finish as a top 15 fantasy running back, regardless of format.
Yeah. 14th in PPR, 15th in standard. All right. Next tier. We will get to that in just one second. Got to remind you about Buffalo Wild Wings. Buffalo Wild Wings understands that being a fantasy football league manager is a tough job. It's important to get a good first impression. It all starts with the draft. If you want your league to love you, book your draft party at B-Dubs. You're going to get a free draft kit and enjoy a special draft feast of boneless wings, 3 sides, 3 shareables for a special price to feed your league. Sign me up. That sounds awesome. Come in and get to drafting up some league manager love at Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports at participating locations while supplies last. Now, things are going to get a little bit more interesting now. We're into rounds 4 and 5, the very good tier. Mike Gillisley, Mark Ingram, Marshawn Lynch, Christian McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, Joe Mixon, and Ty Montgomery. Mike Gillisley, Mark Ingram, Marshawn Lynch, Christian McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, Joe Mixon, Ty Montgomery. So we got some rookies in here. And Dave, I'm assuming this is based on standard scoring?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it would change up in PPR.
Yeah, McCaffrey, I'm sure, would be higher.
McCaffrey would go higher. Cook and Mixon would go higher. Montgomery, too.
They
would all leap Lynch and Ingram.
You want these guys to be your number two running backs, or do you feel confident enough to take three other positions first to make them number one running backs?
I'd be scared to death if any of them were my number one running back.
Really?
If my game plan was to do zero RB, that's a different story. Then I'd take one of these guys to be my number one running back. But otherwise, these are perfect number two running backs.
Okay. Guys, your analysis of this group, Gillisley, Ingram, Lynch, McCaffrey, Cook, Mixon, Montgomery.
I like Ingram and Gillisley and Montgomery a lot. And I'm really getting confused / nervous about Christian McCaffrey. I'm coming around more, I think, maybe on Mixon. Lynch, I don't believe belongs in this tier. I don't really believe Lynch belongs in the next tier.
What?
Mixon's my favorite of the group by far.
Mixon is?
Yeah.
Jamie, Heath and I have been – Heath already did the projection for Joe Mixon. I did one, and I'm going to put it out on CBSSports.com. And I agree with Heath. I think that there is room for Mixon to move up. I just don't know how much higher he could get. But I think even in a year where he's going to split with Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard.
If he does.
I think there's a chance he can still get well over 220 touches. I think he can get about 1,200 yards. The touchdowns is where maybe we differ on that one. I don't know if he's going to score a lot. Heath and I both projected him for 6.
Yeah, I take the over.
I think the talent is there. It's a matter of just how huge of an opportunity he'll get. And I think people are kind of drafting him maybe a little bitty bit too soon.
I think they're drafting him more based on his upside. And his upside,
that's
real,
what I was about to say.
Yes.
He's going in the fourth round.
And by the time the season rolls around, that could be even higher.
I take him to third round. I have no hesitation.
Jamie, do you think Mixon is going to be a week one starter for you, or is this going to be, all right, week five, they finally turn him loose and he produces?
No, I think he'll be the week one starter. Jeremy Hill stinks, and Gio's coming off a torn ACL.
Never in Marvin Lewis's 14 years has a rookie running back started. Now, he changes running backs all the time.
So the second play of the game, Joe Mixon will come in and put Jeremy Hill in.
I guess technically that could happen.
And the big difference between where Dave and I came out on him was I was thinking Mixon ends up about 190 to 195 touches. Dave had him at 220 plus.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's going to come down to is does Jeremy Hill get – like, I don't think Jeremy Hill is good. I spent a lot of last year saying he wasn't any good, so I'm not trying to stand up for Jeremy Hill. But does he get 100 carries this year? Does he get any goal line work? Does Gio Bernard get full strength in week 4 and take the third down work? Or is it just all Mixon all the time?
I think he would need to have the greatest summer ever, Mixon.
Well,
to be
last
all
thing Marvin
Campbell
Lowe said was like you said.
Marvin loves
ever.
Him, but I don't know if he's going to give him that big workload right away. And so the one thing I'll say to you, Jamie, and to everybody else that takes Mixon, you have to be patient. And like Adam said, maybe you don't start him week one. As crazy as it sounds to take a guy with a top 50 pick and not start him right away, we're just not sure. We can't say yet. Training camp hasn't started. The preseason hasn't started.
Well, Adam led the show with benching a top 12 talent in Dez Bryant.
Benching him week one. I do like Mixon more than Dalvin Cook.
Kind of stupid.
Wait a second. How about this? You ready for me to knock your shoes tied? Because I'm going to knock your socks off. Martavis Bryant is more talented than Dez Bryant.
Oy.
You are ridiculous.
I don't know that I believe it, but I don't know that I don't believe it. I actually think Martavis Bryant, as a pure talent, is an exceptional talent. Exceptional.
He might be.
Yeah. All right. There we go. He's probably not a better receiver, but just talent? Who would you rather have in
what
a decathlon?
What goes into talent? If Dez is a better receiver, but Martavis is more talented.
Well, he's got better. I would guess that Dez Bryant has better hands than Martavis Bryant. Probably a better route runner, that kind of stuff. But if you were if you're going to choose one of them to represent you in a decathlon, Heath Cummings, who would you choose?
So you're saying Martavis Bryant is a better athlete
yes.
than Dez Bryant. Okay, yeah. Well, that's fine. I mean, he's what, 5 years younger?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I would say he wins in a decathlon.
Is it
Dez Bryant wins at football?
I don't know how good those guys are at riding the bike.
Is it so unrealistic that Martavis Bryant is like the breakout star at wide receiver this year and is better than Dez Bryant? I mean, I could see Martavis being a top 10 receiver.
So you think they're going to have two top 10 receivers and the number one running back?
I mean, they could definitely have the best offense in football, no question.
I agree with that.
It's possible.
I just don't know if Martavis is going to get the same type of opportunities as Dez.
No, he won't.
If they both play 16 games, they both play an equal amount of snaps. I don't know if I can say that Martavis will have. I don't even know if he'll come within 90% of what the type of targets Dez gets, the number of targets Dez gets.
Dave, we talked about this with the schedule. Why are we even talking about this in the running back tiers? But just to wrap it up.
Because you can't stop talking about your Bryants.
Dez Bryant starts with the Giants, at Denver, at Arizona, home against the Rams, who now have one of the best defensive coordinators in football history. Giants, at Denver, at Arizona, home against the Rams. Martavis Bryant will be better than Dez Bryant through the first 4 weeks of the season. Book it.
But you're forgetting that the Cowboys aren't going to have Ezekiel Elliott, so they'll have to throw it a lot more.
That doesn't matter. Book it. Back to the running backs. Number three. Number two running backs with upside. Round six guys here. Round six, number two with upside. So we're done with several rookie running backs and Montgomery and Gillisley and Ingram. Let's go to Carlos Hyde, CJ Anderson, Paul Perkins, Tevin Coleman, Eddie Lacy, Amir Abdullah, Doug Martin. Carlos Hyde, CJ Anderson, Paul Perkins, Tevin Coleman, Eddie Lacy, Amir Abdullah, Doug Martin, Dave. Give me 1 to 3 words to describe this tier.
Running backs, I'm not very confident in.
That was more than
that's
one.
That's terrible. Come on. All right, not very confident, but you do label them as they have upside.
I mean, they're going to have opportunities. And so, or at least you think that they're going to have opportunities to begin the year. And they fall to a point in the draft where they're not going to kill you if you're wrong. I don't know how many 1,000-yard guys are in this tier.
I'm gonna draft a ton of this tier.
This so far in terms of like group, outside of the first group, this is my second favorite.
But is it because of where you're drafting them, or is it because?
Oh, it's
of the
totally
talent
value,
involved?
But like I like these guys better, to a certain extent, not all of them, but better than Lynch, better than Cook, better than Montgomery. So if you're taking those guys in round four, round five, I'll gladly wait out two rounds and get Anderson, Perkins, Lacy, Abdullah, Martin. I think there's just as much upside, just as much potential, and the numbers that you're talking about, I think these guys can easily get there because some of them have already done it.
So Jamie, I'll start with you, right? So Dave says this is a group with upside. Let me read it again. Hyde, Anderson, Perkins, Coleman, Lacy, Abdullah, Martin. But he says not very confident in them. And I totally get that. I mean, you got to say upside and downside with this group. Who in this group are you confident in, Jamie?
Anderson, Perkins.
Yep. You got to Eddie Lacy, and you're not sure.
Lacy, Abdullah, and Martin.
That's five. Anderson, Perkins, Lacy, Abdullah, Martin. Heath, how many are you? Let me get Heath first, and then Dave.
Confident?
Yeah.
I don't even like. I would probably stop at Anderson and Perkins, but I like the value on all these guys. I don't believe Carlos Hyde. Swap Carlos Hyde and Marshawn Lynch, and then drop Marshawn Lynch again.
Yeah, you really just want no piece of Marshawn.
Hyde, again, just looking at average draft position, Hyde is going at 34th overall, which is insane.
Oh, that is crazy.
That's too high.
Dave, who are you confident in this group?
Well, none, based on what you just said.
Well, maybe I'm wrong for calling it the number two running backs with upside. Maybe it's more risk-reward type of group. And I don't know how big the reward is with these guys. Now, listen. Perfect world. C.J. Anderson stays healthy. Denver's offensive line comes through. Yeah, C.J. Anderson's going to finish as a top 10 running back. You'd say the same thing with all these guys. They all have their flaws. I think it's going to be very hard for Tevin Coleman to find the numbers that he had last year, especially the touchdowns. I'm not really confident in Eddie Lacy finding the form from 2 or 3 years ago when he was dominating. Abdullah, you guys know how I feel about him. Doug Martin's only had 2 good years out of five in the league.
But I just find it interesting that you have such confidence in Dalvin Cook, who is going to be part of a timeshare, who is playing behind a shaky offensive line, who is in a tough division, who may be playing on special teams.
I don't think he's in that tough of a division.
Okay, so take that.
And I think he can create behind a line that's going to be better than it was last year.
It won't be worse.
No,
it can't possibly be worse.
I would agree with that.
But I mean, to say that again, it's your confidence level. But to say that he has the chance to be better than these guys, I think is risky, given what his scenario is. In the same conversation of, there's at least five guys here. Six, I think, that are walking into starting jobs where he's still not guaranteed that.
Let me ask you a question. How many of the guys in this group are going to get 200 touches this year?
Touches?
Touches. Because I think Dalvin Cook is headed for 200 touches.
Can we assume they're playing 16 games?
If they're playing 16 games, they're all probably getting 200 touches.
Well, not Coleman.
Okay. Except who, for Coleman. Who in this group are you confident will get 200 touches? Because I think Dalvin Cook can get
Perkins does.
I think Perkins does.
I think Anderson does.
I think Anderson does. I think Lacy does. I think Abdul does. And I think Martin, taking away the 4-game suspension per game.
Right. On a per game break. Right.
And damn it, Carlos Hyde should too.
Let me say this, Dave. How do you feel about this statement? The running backs in this group, most of them, Hyde, Anderson, Perkins, Coleman, Lacy, Abdullah, Martin, except for Martin because he has a suspension. From week 1 to week 17, they might outperform Dalvin Cook. But at some point, if things go as you see it, Dave, when Cook finally becomes the bona fide starter for the Vikings, he's going to be a lot better than most, if not all, of these guys. Is that sort of how you're feeling? That's kind of what I'm picking up.
Yeah, and I think Cook will get that job much sooner than later because I think his competition is not very good at all. His competition, I've come around on this. I think his competition is tougher than what Joe Mixon's competition is in Cincinnati. But I don't think either of those rookies have nearly as tough competition as some other running backs in the league. Certainly in the case of Coleman, when it comes to touches, he's got impossible competition. The Lions are gonna, I was going to say a word that I probably shouldn't say on the air. The Lions are going to continue to limit Amir Abdullah. And I don't know for sure that Doug Martin's going to be an every down back again. Mm. What if Quiz Rogers gets off to a hot start and they use them both?
Wow. I don't know what word you were going to use instead of limit. I'm going to have to keep working on that.
It was block.
Yeah. Probably should have just stuck with limit.
Yeah.
So, let's do one more tier here. The number three running backs with upside, that would be Kareem Hunt. This is starting at about round 7 for Dave. Number three running backs with upside, Kareem Hunt, Samaje Perine, Spencer Ware, Frank Gore, Danny Woodhead, Bilal Powell, and Derrick Henry. Kareem Hunt, Samaje Perine, Spencer Ware, Frank Gore, Danny Woodhead, Bilal Powell, Derrick Henry. React.
I think with these guys, like, things have to break right for them just to get to 1,000 total yards.
You don't have Blunt in this group?
I don't have Blunt in this group.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm not as big on Blunt as the rest of the world.
Jamie, I guess you would have Blunt in this group?
Yeah, this is the perfect range for him. I mean, he's essentially, I don't see much difference, honestly, between him and Frank Gore. You know, a guy that's in his 30s, a guy that's, going to be the focal point of the backfield in Philadelphia, similar to Gore in Indianapolis. And the difference would be his Philly's offensive line is great. And he's going to have the chance, if he stays healthy, to score, you know, 8+ touchdowns.
I don't like feeling this way. So I'm saying this with great trepidation, but I think Frank Gore is probably being underrated again.
But I mean, at some point his age is going to catch up to him.
At some point his age is going to catch up to him. But we've gone through two tiers now where we haven't had a guy that didn't have some question marks.
I kind of
feel
like
Gore's question mark is age.
I think his age already did catch up to him. He did not do well. He did not play well last year.
But he
certainly did. To your point, Heath. Is he going to get worse than he was last year? Because Frank Gore didn't really wow us. He just benefited from being on Andrew Luck's team.
He just bludgeoned us.
But same thing like Blunt. Blunt just scored
he
more
caught
touchdowns.
He caught 4 receiving touchdowns.
That helps, but that's Gore caught 4 receiving touchdowns, you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Luck has, a good history of spreading the ball around, getting his running backs involved, getting, Bradshaw had a very productive year off the top of my head.
If you take those 4 receiving touchdowns away from Gore, how far does he really fall?
Far.
Ooh.
Far? Way
it's
far.
Going to be pretty far. He finishes the number 12 running back, regardless of format.
Right.
He would
five
be
spots.
Numero 22.
No.
Yeah. You take away 24 points.
He'd be top.
How many points for a touchdown?
I'm sorry. He'd be 21.
I screwed up my math. I was giving him 4 points for receiving.
So that is
touchdown.
A long fall, but relative to where he's being drafted in the mid-30s at running back, it's still a lot better.
But there's also the fear of another year older, my fear, another year older, that I don't think this talk of giving Robert Turbin more work is false because they did it last year and he scored touchdowns and he will probably be in that role again. And then Malcolm Mack and what he can – Malcolm Mack?
Marlon Mack.
Marlon Mack.
What Marlon Mack can do also taking both those guys off the field. So I just think that Gore is – this is the right spot for him. It's just a guy that you're taking as a number three, as a flex, and the hope that you get – like I'm drafting him with the hope that I get 8 good games out of him.
It's with reluctance though, right?
Not here. Not in this spot. I probably wouldn't take him before round 8, but – It's the spot.
He's the running back you take when you're desperate for running backs and everybody that's left looks like Patrick from Sports.
Like I took him and I did this with a few players in a startup dynasty league, you know, where he's my kind of insurance policy. Mm-hmm. This is after taking I know
what round did he go in that?
Oh, it was very late.
Yeah,
double digits.
Because it's a dynasty league.
I took Jordan Howard, I took Todd Gurley, I took Jamal Williams for sure ahead of him, those three for 100% certainty. So Gore is kind of my break glass in case of emergency that I hope I never have to play.
He's the break glass in case of emergency running back on draft day. When you look at your team and you go, oh, I need more running back help. Well, there's Frank Gore. Okay, I'll take him.
Well, that's going to conclude today's discussion of running back tiers. Tomorrow we'll do a mailbag at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. And then next week we'll probably get to wide receiver and tight end tiers, but you know, when do training camps start?
Actually, rookies have started reporting already. By July 29th, Adam, every team will be in training camp.
Very fun. So we'll have plenty to talk about. Please send us your emails. Again, fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. You can also tweet us at Adam Azer, AIZER, at Jamie Eisenberg, JAMEY. Eisenberg, at Heath Cummings Sr., Heath Cummings SR, at Dave Richard, singular, Dave Richard. Jamie, did you have fun at the wedding?
Your wedding was awesome, buddy.
The wedding was awesome.
It sucked. Huh?
What'd you say, Dave, that it sucked?
That Jamie told me that it sucked.
No way. The wedding was
Jamie
great.
Jamie left early.
He did leave a little early. I don't think he danced for 1 second. Did you dance at all?
I danced plenty.
Okay, good. I'm sorry then.
I danced with you.
I don't remember you dancing with me. I remember you picking me up. I remember me getting in like a pyramid on top of you and Nando, which was weird.
Yep.
I remember
Nando and I had fun at some of the highlight spots of a typical wedding. We pretended to cut your cake. We pretended to sit at your table. Well, we sat at your table, pretended to drink your champagne.
Oh, you could have had that. That would have been fine with me.
You drank alcohol. I was surprised.
Oh, God. Yeah, the wine.
Yeah, your brother's toast was amazing.
It was?
All the toasts were amazing.
Okay.
Your wedding was fantastic.
Oh, we had such a good time. I want to have another one. Heath, you're invited.
No, thanks.
And I will say, Dave, you should know this. First of all, you wrote me a very nice card, very, very nice note. You are the only person, I think, that I invited that did not come that actually got me a gift.
Well, I love you.
Well, thank you, Dave. You're a sweetheart.
Known you a long time. And I appreciate all that you do, both in work and away from work.
And I will leave you with this. One more thing about Bermuda. While I was in Bermuda, I had, for the first time in my life, I believe, rum raisin ice cream. It was amazing. Might be my new favorite. And it just proves that raisins are good even in ice cream. Versatile food.
I don't know if I've ever had rum raisin.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah, get some Amy? Tonight. Get some tonight. So.
Somebody sent us an email that finished with mushrooms are better than raisins.
No, mushrooms are grosser than raisins.
They're 100% right.
No, you would have mushrooms and ice cream? Get out of here.
No,
I'd rather have mushrooms than raisins.
The email said mushrooms are grosser than raisins. And we read it on the baseball podcast today. And they're both two of my favorites. So for three of my favorites, Dave, Jamie, and Heath, I'm Adam. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Fantasy Football Today.
Bye.